Chapter 1. Participatory Democracy of Topanga, formerly Topanga Canyon. Crown Province of Westria, formerly California. High Kingdom of Montabaul, formerly Western North America. August, Hauchizuki, 26th. Change Year 46. Shohei 1, 2044 AD. Prince John Arminger Mackenzie stood and sweated in his suit of chrome steel plate, glad of the shade of the raised visor that stuck out from his flared salad helm like the bill of the ritual cap baseball players wore. The fierce southland sun glittered off the rocky ground and sank into the faded asphalt of the ancient roadway and blinked in endless sparkles from the surface of the Pacific to the southward. There was a familiar smell of hot horse, hot human, sweat-soaked leather, and metal greased with canola oil that always went slightly rancid, a composite scent common to wherever warriors gathered, no matter how polished their appearance. It was fairly powerful since his sister, their men-at-arms and crossbowmen and Mackenzie archers and McClintock Catarans, the Japanese contingent and several hundred local levies from Topanga and the Chatsworth Lancers were all standing and sweltering together. The score of robed Bene Yakov from the Mojave were a little to one side, a people apart, but their mounts added hot camel to the mix, which was indescribable. Despite the tension of the moment, as everyone stared out over the water towards the quartet of enemy ships, he smiled to himself, remembering his parents inspecting troops once. That had also been on a hot day, in the county Palatine of Walla Walla, far up in the Columbia. There had been a rather sheltered town-based cleric with them, and he'd asked what the smell was. His mother had considered gravely for a moment and said, "Esprit de corps." She'd said it deadpan, but he'd noticed his father working hard at not bellowing with laughter. Today, that familiar, almost stink, went with the odd alien scents of fennel and sage that summer baked out of the chaparral here, harsh and spicy at once. "We're back in the stew pot just when we thought the adventure was over with," he thought, "though everything's grist for the mill." He was a prince and warrior by birth, second child of the first High King and Queen of Montabaul, but a troubadour and bard by aspiration, and he could appreciate the irony of the situation from an artistic point of view. They dared the desert and the supernatural perils of the Valley of Death. Well, to be entirely fair, mostly Ori and Reiko dared them in that last bit. Good ensemble cast. Some comic relief from the heroic characters' points of view. Someone for the groundlings to identify with, too. They'd reclaimed the fabled grass-cutting sword that their Nihonjin friends had crossed the sea to find, made unexpected allies of the desert-dwelling Bnei Yaakov to bring it back through the desert and the just-barely-friendly lands of the Chatsworth Lancers and the Topangans. And now, four enemy ships were sitting out there waiting for them, instead of the clear passage back to the northern heartlands of the realm that they'd expected. It would make an excellent startling reverse in the epical chanson he'd tentatively entitled The Desert and the Blade. A quiet interlude in the music, then a hint of doubt, minor key, crashing chords building to a crescendo. Artistically fine. In my all-too-mortal person, it's a bloody menace. Not to mention those ugly-looking eaters the Koreans have picked up from the Los Angeles ruins. The locals had a powerful pre-change telescope set up. One look had been enough. The Korean vessels swarmed with the naked savages, scrawny and scarred and ferocious as great rats among the ordered, armored Easterners. The Diabolists could control them somehow. "This bunch look even worse than the ones we've fought up on the bay. And those were bad enough." He swallowed and blinked as the stink came back, and the screaming faces and the ugly feel of edged metal hammering into meat and bone vibrated up into his hand.